They chatted about old times for a few minutes before Betterton got around to business. "Hey, Hugh," he said, bending forward over the counter, "I wonder if you could do me a favor."
"Sure, what do you want?" "I can get you a great weekly rate on a convertible,"
Fourier chuckled again. "I was curious whether a certain individual might have rented a car from you." Fourier's smile faded.
"A certain individual? Why do you want to know?"
"I'm a reporter."
"Jesus, this isn't for a story, is it? Since when did you start doing hard news?"
Betterton shrugged as nonchalantly as he could. "It's just something I'm following up."
"You know I can't give you information about our clients."
"I'm not looking for a lot of information." Betterton leaned still closer. "Listen, I'll describe the guy, tell you what he was driving. All I want to know is his name and where he flew in from." Fourier frowned.
"I don't know about this."
"I swear, I'll keep you and you save out of the story completely."
"Man, this is asking a lot. Confidentiality is really big in our business."
"The guy was foreign. Speaks with some kind of European accent. Tall, thin. He had a mole below one eye, wore an expensive raincoat or trench coat. He'd have rented a dark blue Ford Fusion, probably on October 28th. A look crossed Fourier's face, and Betterton immediately knew he'd struck gold. "You remember him, right?"
"Ned!"
"Come on, Hugh."
"I can't."
"Look, you can see how much I know about the guy already. I just need this little bit more from you, please." Fourier hesitated, then he sighed.
"Yeah, I remember him, just as you describe. A heavy accent, German."
"And this was the 28th?
"Guess so. It was a week or two back."
"Can you check?" Betterton hoped that if he could get Fourier to enter the information into his terminal, he might sneak a glance at the results. But Fourier didn't bite.
"No, I can't."
"Oh well.
And a name?"
Fourier hesitated again.
"It was Falconer, Conrad Falconer, I think. No, Klaus Falconer."
"And where was he coming from?"
"Miami, Dixie Airlines."
"How do you know? Did you see the ticket?"
"We asked the customers to give us their arrival flight, so in the case of a delay, we can hold the reservation."
Fourier's face had closed down, and Betterton knew he'd get nothing more. "Okay, thanks, Hugh. I owe you one."
"Yes, you do."
As another customer came in, Fourier turned away with evident relief. Sitting in his Nissan in the U-Save parking lot, Betterton fired up his laptop, ensured his wireless connection was good, and then made a quick canvas of the Dixie Airlines website. He noticed they had only two flights into the local airport each day, one from Miami and another from New York. They arrived within an hour of each other. "He was wearing a fancy raincoat like you see in those spy movies." That's what Billy B. had said. Another quick check of the web informed him that October 28th had been a hot and sunny day in Miami. In New York, however, it had been cold with heavy rain. So the man, Betterton was almost convinced he was the killer, had lied about where he'd come from. Not surprising. Of course, it was possible he'd lied about the airline as well, maybe given a phony name. But that seemed to be carrying paranoia too far. Thoughtfully, he shut down his laptop. Falconer had come from New York, and Pendergast was living in New York. Were they in league? Pendergast sure as hell wasn't in Malforche on official business, not with blowing up a bar and sinking a bunch of boats on his agenda. And this NYPD captain? New York City cops had a reputation for corruption and for being involved in the drug trade. He started to see the big picture. The Mississippi River, the burned-out lab in the swamp, the New York connection, the brutal and execution-style killing of the Brodies, corrupt law enforcement. Damn, if this wasn't about a major drug operation. That did it. He was going to New York. He plucked his cell phone from his pocket, dialed.
"Ezerville B.," came a shrill voice. "Janine speaking."
Janine, it's Ned.
Ned, how's the vacation going?
Educational, thanks.
Are you going to be back at work tomorrow? Mr. Cranston needs somebody to cover the rib-eating contest over at the...
Sorry, Janine. I'm going to extend my vacation by a couple of days. A pause.
Well, when are you coming back?
Not sure. Maybe 3 days, maybe four. I'll let you know. I still have a week coming to me.
Yeah, but I'm not sure Mr. Cranston sees it that way.
Her voice trailed off. See you. Betterton snapped the phone shut before she could say anything more. Chapter 48. New York City. Judson Esterhazy, in his role as Dr. Ernest Poole, walked briskly down the corridor of Mount Mercy Hospital, Felder at his side. They were following a Dr. Ostrom, director of the hospital, who seemed polite, discreet, and extremely professional. Excellent qualities for a man in his position.
I believe you shall find this morning's consultation to be most interesting, Esterhazy told Ostrom. As I've explained to Dr. Felder, the chances of her manifesting selective amnesia regarding any knowledge of me are high.
I am eager to witness it, Ostrom said.
And you've told her nothing about me, or prepared her in any way for this visit?
She's been told nothing.
Excellent. We should probably keep the actual visit quite short. Whatever she does or does not profess to know, the emotional strain will, though most likely unconscious in origin, no doubt be significant.
A wise precaution, Felder agreed. They turned a corner, waited for an orderly to unlock a metal door.
She will almost certainly appear uncomfortable in my presence, Esterhazy went on. This, of course, involves her own discomfort with her suppressed memories involving my earlier treatment. Ostrom nodded. One last thing. At the close of the visit,